This is James Corbett of the Corbett Report. It's the 1st of September 2009, and today I'm joined on the program by Sander Hicks. Sander Hicks is an activist and journalist who authored The Big Wedding, 9/11, The Whistleblowers, and The Cover-Up. His latest endeavor is to organize We Demand Transparency, a conference for peace, truth, and a new economics, which will be taking place in New York City from September 11th to the 13th, 2009. Mr. Hicks, thank you for joining me today on the program.
Oh, James, it's good to be here.
All right. Well, Sander, let's start by hearing about yourself and your background. How did you start questioning the official version of events like 9/11, and what events in your own life have brought you to where you are today?
Oh, great question. Yeah, the very first thing that started the process of questioning and made me go down this Alice in Wonderland-esque rabbit hole was seeing a web video of Barry Zwicker, actually up in Canada. And he had his own TV program on Canadian television. And they were doing cutting-edge webcasting back in 2001 before anybody really realized that you could do web video. And he was had a very well-edited piece about questioning the official story and about what, you know, where were the fighter planes, where was the air defense that day. And I was already inclined to be skeptical because I had been an entrepreneur and a publisher with a underground publishing company called Soft Skull Press. We had republished a controversial biography of Bush starting back in 99. So for 2 years before 9/11, I had been trying to get the truth out about Bush, his business ties, his business background, his life of shaved corners and special favors, which included a very interesting historical tie to certain rich Saudis and the elite, the ruling class of Saudi Arabia, people including Sheikh Khalid bin Mahfouz, who's tied to BCCI, Bank of Credit and Commerce International, and Al-Qaeda, and Salim bin Laden, who is tied to, obviously, his half-brother Osama bin Laden, who was a former CIA asset, which a lot of people know about now. So I was inclined to be a skeptic, but not just a skeptic, but somebody who was already trying to get out the real history of ruling class intrigue.
Well, certainly over the years, you have built up a name for yourself within the 9/11 truth community for your book, your reporting, your research, your activism. But even a cursory glance at your journalism and activism shows that you have an extremely broad range of interests. So in your own words, how does your 9/11 activism fit into your overall body of work?
Yeah, you're right. It's an obsession, and it's almost like sometimes I check myself and I wonder, am I too obsessed with 9/11? You know, I don't want to be a geek who's just obsessed with trivia or facts about a situation or a historical occurrence. What I always try to do is step back, and I try to put it in historical context and say that 9/11 was not the only false flag operation. And by false flag, we mean a military operation in which there's an attack, and it's blamed on an enemy, but the enemy that it's blamed on was not actually the perpetrator of the attack. And there are historical precedents for this. There's the USS Liberty in 67, in the Mediterranean, which was attacked by Israelis. It was a U.S. warship. There's the Gulf of Tonkin, which sparked off the Vietnam War. There's questions people have about Pearl Harbor. There's the Spanish-American War, and there's the Mexican-American War, both of which were started with false flag attacks. So there's actually a rich, rich vein to mine in terms of the history of false provocations sparking off a war that would have been extremely unpopular if there hadn't been some sort of emotive motivating force.
Well, I ask that because I see that you're organizing what seems to me to look like a very different type of 9/11 conference with We Demand Transparency. And so tell people what you're planning and how this conference came about.
Okay, great. Yeah, I realize that's also part of your question, and so I do want to go there. There is a need, I think, especially in this time of recession. A lot of people have questions about how did the economy go so get so disrupted so quickly. I think there's a natural curiosity right now to talk more about economics, not just about 9/11 truth or the truth about war and peace issues, but also how does economics impact us. And it obviously impacts us a lot. I personally lost my job this year being the head of a small fair trade coffee house company that had a couple of locations open in New York City. But, so personally, it's personal for me. The economy, the global economy, the New York economy, the United States economic meltdown personally impacted my life. So I'm trying to, I guess, exploit the natural affinity that a lot of the 9/11 truth people already have to ask questions about the Federal Reserve System and to ask questions about Wall Street's control of the White House or the role of special interests in U.S. politics. And I think that there's also a lot of burnout happening in the 9/11 truth movement, to the extent that people are asking, what next? People don't just want to go to the same old conference and see people they've already seen before. They wouldn't get anything out of that. So I'm trying to be provocative and stimulating and new, and I'm trying to cross-pollinate the movement. I do know a lot of people in the anti-war movement, critical economic thinkers on the left and in the center. And so I'm trying to make it almost like a punk show or a rock and roll show, in which you don't just get a bill of goods, you don't get what you came for. You get surprised, you get your mind expanded because something happens or somebody says something that you weren't expecting, and it challenges you to think, it challenges you to process and to figure out, what of this new information do I accept? What do I want more information about? What do I reject? And that should be the process. And there's people on my bill on the conference that are controversial, and people are saying to me, how could you blah 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 with this person, and how could you possibly give this person some time? And it's like, hey, I'm not even personally endorsing 100% of everything that each person has ever said. That would be impossible. There's no litmus test. This is not about political correctness. This is more about, again, it's I'm not using a politically correct aesthetic. I'm using much more of a punk rock aesthetic, in which surprising the audience or shocking the audience or provoking the audience to participate is more important than pleasing the audience or placating the audience.
Well, I like that idea of cross-pollinating with some of the other movements that are going on, and I think that's important. I guess some people may try to construe this as some sort of dilution of the 9/11 truth message, but personally, I think this is the direction that 9/11 truth was always heading in, which is to say that 9/11, however horrific, it was simply one day in a very large and complex world historical pattern that was enabled by a complex economic, political, corporate infrastructure. So to me, it seems that 9/11 truth was always fundamentally about challenging that structure and attempting to follow the links between 9/11 and the rest of history. So what's your take on that topic?
Yeah, that's exactly it. In fact, I'm thinking about my introductory remarks, and I'm thinking what I have to emphasize is that what we are studying when we study 9/11 is not, we're not just studying the science and the data. And we're not just, again, obsessed with one day. It's more like what we're studying is something extremely important. What we are studying is the nature of power in our time. This is how power works. These are the dynamics of political power and how it manipulates the media, how it owns the media, and how, as a counterpoint, let's look at the success of the 9/11 truth movement. We don't own the television stations. We don't own the radio stations. We don't own too many newspapers. And yet, just by the power of truth, the power of what is called buzz or, word of mouth marketing, the power of having technology like the internet and, the DVD, the burner, the free DVD, I think, is going to be someday recorded by historians as being an extremely powerful tool for countering propaganda. This idea of we have people on the street in every major city in America giving away gifts, giving away the gift of 8 hours worth of really interesting underground movie footage, you know, stuff about Waco, Oklahoma City, and 9/11. And so to answer your question, that's a great point. That to really do this, you can't just be obsessed about one day. You have to really step back and say, you know, what are we really doing here when we study 9/11? We're really trying to get under the hood and get really curious about political power.
Well, you bring up a good point there. I think the free DVD is mightier than the sword, because I think that the spreading of information and the way that information is being spread in this day and age is I don't know, a large section of the battle, I guess, against whatever the enemy may or may not be construed as. But I guess it seems to me that there are a number of ways to approach the subject, and you have an incredible lineup of very wide-ranging lineup of guests. So tell us a little bit about some of the people who will be speaking at this conference.
Sure. Let's talk first about Ellen Brown. She wrote Web of Debt, and she is a attorney and a economist and a feminist as well. And there's not enough women on the bill, so I'll talk about the women first. Ellen Brown wrote this book, Web of Debt, and she is anti-Federal Reserve. And she talks about the Federal Reserve system and also talks about the kind of a macro view of the American banking system as a whole, fractional reserve banking, and the way banking really is tied into the culture of debt. And so it's especially relevant now because a lot of people are kind of waking up about Obama. He's not about change and transparency. He's actually about more of the same and a more extreme version of power through Wall Street. And that's the power he represents, not the power that he necessarily wields, but more like who he's truly a figurehead for, because he's even closer to Goldman Sachs and the Wall Street powers. And you know, especially look at the economic financial transition team leader was Robert Rubin, the guy who was a major financial advisor under Clinton and then went to work at Citibank after he passed the Glass-Steagall Act. Look at Larry Summers, the Obama National Economic Advisor, who also has ties to Goldman Sachs. Look at Tim Geithner, who's the former president of the Federal Reserve Bank, now the Secretary of Treasury. So this stuff is especially relevant now. And so when I read Web of Debt, I was really blown away because Ellen Brown has actually got practical solutions. She looks back to Lincoln and his greenback policy. This guy, Lincoln, had the guts to take us off the gold standard and to directly mint currency instead of buying currency from a third party the way the U.S. government does now. By buying its currency from the Federal Reserve Bank. Lincoln said, you know, we don't need to do that. We can directly print currency and not have it be pegged to any outside standard, and that this won't cause crazy inflation, and that this is the way that he helped save the Union in the Civil War. So she is talking about historical precedents like Lincoln, the greenback policy, the populist party, and I feel that, you know, she's not your traditional left-wing thinker, and that, I think, is what we need. I think we need people that can speak plainly and in a friendly way about the very complex economic mess that we're in.
Yes, and some of the other speakers might include?
Oh, sure. First of all, I've never actually heard anybody say that we might be a dilution of the 9/11 truth message, because what I've done is I've packed 9/12, the Saturday day, full of the top 9/11 truth leaders, people like Richard Gage, head of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, who gives a very compelling presentation. And I just saw him in Colorado speak back-to-back with Eric Lawyer, who is his new friend. Eric Lawyer is a Seattle firefighter and is the recent founder of Firefighters for 9/11 Truth, which is extremely important strategically because we need more firefighters, especially in New York City. There's been a gag order on the firefighters. You know, a lot of these, you know, salt of the earth guys, they know what's up. You know, a lot of them died on 9/11. A lot of them are still grieving, but what we haven't had in New York City, we haven't had firefighters stand up as a class or as a movement and say, you know, we have questions about, well, let's go by the book. Look at the fire manual. So Eric Lawyer's presentation is really compelling because he says, let's go by the book and look at the fire investigation manual that was in use in 2001. And let's look at the different ways that they grossly violated the standard procedures for investigating a fire. Just give you one example, James. When there is a over-insurance, a overloading of insurance right before an event, and then there's a gigantic fire, that is a huge red flag to look in to start an arson investigation. And that makes sense, right? And then you compare that to 9/11. That's exactly what happened. Larry Silverstein, leaseholder of the World Trade Center, took out a gigantic set of insurance policies in July of 2001, effectively right before the event. And so Eric Lawyer is saying, wow, they cleaned up the crime scene very expeditiously. They exported all that steel out of the country right away. And you had an over insurance right before the event. This is, clearly there should have been red flags raised, and the firefighters and the city should have done some sort of arson investigation, unless they were in on it, unless they were told XYZ is going to happen, and you have to respond by violating the rules of evidence, and you have to export evidence and destroy evidence. And that's exactly what happened. We also have Kevin Barrett on the bill. Kevin Barrett is controversial, but I believe he's a good man. And he is an American Muslim, former professor at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. But he has been blackballed from academia for being an outspoken critic. He was on Fox News a couple of times. And the hammer really fell on him in academia because his bosses said that... we don't like the controversy. Would you please not do 9/11 truth anymore? And he said no. He was felt compelled to speak the truth. He's written a good book called Truth Jihad, and he'll be speaking. We have a great interview with him up right now on our website, WeDemandTransparency.com. We got Barry Zwicker and Ian Woods from Global Outlook in Canada, two of Canada's top 9/11 truth guys. We also have Graham McQueen, who is a peace activist from Canada. And that's important for me too, because in fact, I've got Graham McQueen speaking a couple of times on Saturday, the 9/11 truth day, but then also on Sunday, in which we're trying to go into economics, intelligence, and strategies for the anti-war movement. That's sort of the focus on Sunday. And Graham will be speaking as part of a panel late in the day about how to build a bridge between the peace and the truth movements. And that's really important to me. And speaking of peace movements, anti-war movements, we have Deborah Sweet. She's the national director of WorldCan'tWait.org, which is one of, I think, the most on-point groups, because they're not just about anti-war issues. They're also about impeachment. They're also anti-torture. So they have more of a broad focus. And I've known her for years, so I'm happy to have her on the bill. Let's see. We got a film series. We have Daniel Hopsicker debuting his new film, American Drug Lords. This is the guy that found Muhammad Atta's American girlfriend down in Florida. He's done a lot of firsthand investigative reporting. He's been a friend of mine for a long time. Even before 9/11, we used to work together, and back when I was the publisher of the Fortunate Son Bush biography. Craig Ranke from Citizens Investigation Team has done a lot of original reporting. He has a film out about the flight path of the Flight 77 that came and allegedly may have hit the Pentagon, or he alleges that there was probably a flyover. He's got eyewitnesses. Unlike some theoreticians, Craig Ranke actually has got original reporting. He's actually gone down there and talked to people, and in some cases talked to people and then spooked them out, and they don't want to talk anymore, but at least he got them on the record the first time. And so he's one of these people that's controversial, but I respect the fact that he's actually done original research. He's not just sitting in Paris theorizing about what hit the Pentagon. He is actually going to Arlington and knocking on doors and getting people on tape. So Who did I leave out? A zillion people. There's a zillion, like a lot of people on the bill that that I have not yet mentioned. But yeah, WeDemandTransparency.com has got a full listing and a full schedule with time slots and airtight organization.
Well, it does sound like a fascinating conference, and there are a number of speakers that I would personally love to hear if I had the chance, but unfortunately I don't. But for those listeners out there who do have the chance to attend, tell us in more detail about how they can get more information and purchase tickets.
Okay, great. Well, we're not using Ticketmaster. We're using a fair trade ticket company called Brown Paper Tickets. And instead of charging you 30%, they charge you just a couple of bucks extra to get you tickets. We have tickets for sale at WeDemandTransparency.com. We have special discounts for out-of-town travelers. If you're traveling with a small group of people, like three or four people, you'll get 25% off if you're traveling from out of town. We also have a whole list of cheap places to stay and nice places to stay. And yeah, that's all under the website WeDemandTransparency.com. At the risk of repeating myself.
All right. Well, Sander Hicks, it sounds like this could be a new clarion call for truth and justice based on transparency and peace. And if so, then I can think of no better way to honor those who fell on 9/11/01. But do you have any final words you'd like to leave the listeners with today?
Wow. You just sort of summed it up there. That was really nice of you. And I think you're totally right. But yeah, you got to remember that Vaclav Havel and the Velvet Revolution, when they were going up against an incredibly powerful enemy in the terms of, you know, Stalinist communism and the Iron Curtain, they simply asked for transparency. And by keeping the call simple and rather poetic, they were able to eventually defeat the Iron Curtain and the forces of militarism and violence and secrecy eventually fell to the simple popular call for peace and truth and transparency. And so that's the model we're trying to follow. We're trying to be rock and roll when they're trying to be more Stalinist.
All right. Well, Sander Hicks, thank you for joining me today on the Corbett Report.
Great, James. Thanks for having me on. I'll see you later.